Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Mike Heck, and he'll be answering your most important questions on Spring Creek strategies. The show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Mike a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and your email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within about 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to the website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Mike Heck about Spring Creek strategies. The Federation of Fly Fishers needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. It is involved in the Mangrove Recovery Initiative in Florida and the Trout of the Desert Southwest Initiative to help the recovery of rare native trout. The Endangered Fisheries Initiative is also helping to prevent the introduction of harmful aquatic species to new waters with their Clean Angling Pledge. Federation won a National Conservation Award for its efforts. To continue this great work on behalf of all fly fishers, the Federation needs to increase its membership. It needs more concerned anglers willing to join in support of such projects, and by doing so, give something back to the sport that has given so much to each of us. Join the Federation of Fly Fishers today and help support their fine work. For more information, go to the Federation website at www.fedflyfishers.org. That's www.fedflyfishers.org. Before we introduce Mike, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Mike's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners of those drawings at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Mike Heck's book, Spring Creek Strategies, courtesy of Stackpole Books and Headwater Books. And here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. And the question will be about something we talk about during the show, and you must submit your answer along with your name and location using the text box on our homepage. So listen closely and use your best typing skills, and hopefully you'll win Mike's book. Tonight our guest is Mike Heck. Mike has been fly fishing the beloved Cumberland Valley stream since boyhood. Childhood fishing years would be spent on Falling Springs, where he would get a 25-cent ice cream from Frey's Dairy and then go back to fishing. Once Mike got his driver's license, it was game on. Days out of school would be spent on many great spring creeks in the area. Mike was blessed to have been able to learn the art of fly fishing on some of the hardest and most famous spring creeks in the country. He's been doing so for over 30 years. Mike is a graduate of Penn State, where he acquired a degree in forestry. Mike is the author of Spring Creek Strategies and also contributed to Tying Dry Flies. He has also had articles published in Fly Fisherman, American Angler, and Fish and Fly Magazine. Mike has appeared on the TV show Road Trip USA, a Discovery Channel show that aired across Europe. He operates an Orvis-endorsed professional guide service for the Falling Springs, Latorte, Yellow Breeches, and many other South Central PA trout streams. Mike is also an innovative fly tire with several patterns credited to his name. These flies include the Simple Shrimp, Big Eye Rainbow, Mike's Midge's Pupa, and Snowshoe Merger series of patterns, and his well-known Betis and Sulfur Nymphs. Well, Mike, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thank you very much for having me tonight, Roger. I'm looking forward to this evening.
Well, yeah, we'll have a good time here. We got great audience participation here. We got a ton of questions tonight, so people are interested in spring creeks, and I guess you probably know why, don't you?
Absolutely. They are a tough little beast to sometimes tackle. Even the best person can sometimes be tamed by these little tricky waters.
Yeah, they do pose a challenge to many of us, that's for sure. Well, let's...
They are a love-hate relationship.
Yeah. We have a lot of those relationships in life, don't we?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, let's just start out by, you know, defining what is a spring creek and how is it different from freestone streams we have out west here? We do have some spring creeks out west, too, but not nearly as many and not nearly as famous, probably, as the ones in your neck of the woods.
We got spring creeks. Spring creeks is kind of different and unique, but they're spring creeks. What defines is what became out of the English chalk streams, what originated fly fishing out there. There's spring creeks all the way to Hawaii. The volcanic ash out there in Hawaii that comes, the water comes out of the volcano eruptions, that water is affected by the volcanic gravel and whatnot, and the spring creeks are exact the same. What defines a spring creek is the formation, the water can't rely on the formations. They literally hit that bottom rock, and then they bubble out from that point on. What a true spring creek is the limestone, which we have in this area, which it comes up through the limestone, and it takes the calcium carbonate out of that limestone and buffers the pH. Whereas out west, you have no limestone, but it goes through all that dirt and whatnot you guys have out that way, and it still buffers out a lot of the stuff, and you have the spring creeks out your way, and you have the spring creeks out our way. They're just differently geological factors. The biggest thing is, with any of the spring creeks, they remain cold, they remain clear, and on top of that, good nutrient loads creates lots of insects, lots of aquatic life, and the vegetation, and on top of that, which we all know, good spring creeks have lots of trout. So there's different things on how to affect that. As with freestoners, water can't percolate down to stone, heavy stone, and that pretty much comes right out of the ground, and it's still affected by acid and stuff like that.
So spring creeks in general are, I guess, more low gradient, and you think of freestones as more higher gradient in more hilly and mountainous regions. Is that true?
Yep, absolutely. Spring creeks are definitely known for more low gradient. There are a few spring creeks that are meeting the high gradient. There's actually a couple in PA that are weird that actually flow out of the mountains. One's Yellow Creek that actually is kind of a mountainous stream that's actually a true spring creek. But most of them are low gradient streams. The sediment settles. As I tell most people, a good situation in our area is if these spring creeks have a good flushing, as I call it, every now and then. It's nice to have these heavy thunderstorms come through to get rid of some of that bad sediment and displace it in good places, since they are so low gradient. Take, for instance, the Fallen Springs. There's 4,000 some feet of water that has 4 feet of fall. So you're talking, like you said, Roger, very low gradient streams for the most part.
Do you find your fishing techniques and tactics differ then quite a bit when you're on spring creeks as opposed to freestone? In the way that, you know, the freestone, we might get a stronger drift than you would on a spring creek. Is that true, or is it you still get a good current in most of them?
For most of the spring creeks in my area, you're going to see lower flows. You're going to see smoother waters. You are going to definitely see some ripples and here or there, which you'll get some turbulence. But for the most part, you're going to see some different situations as you would a freestone stream. That's why most of the presentations we say for the most part are upstream. These trout can see you from a long distance off. You're going to be casting maybe long leaders, certainly shorter or lighter diameter leaders, 7, 8X at some points. But for the most part, it's different tactics, but what you learn on the spring creeks will certainly enhance your skills on any other stream you see.
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, we've got a question from Duke in New York. Duke's asked questions on many of our other shows. And Duke, hope you're listening because, boy, you really were prolific this week. A lot of good questions, and we appreciate that. I've broken a lot of them up and tried to organize them a bit more and mix them in with some of the others. But we'll try to get to all your questions, Duke, and see if we can help you out. His first question was, when is the best time to fish spring creeks, both time of day and season. And yeah, we were just, I know there were some other questions later on about winter, and we can maybe address those specifically, but is there a better season than others for spring creeks and better times of day?
Spring creeks are unique, and that's, and I'll say unique as much as I say stealth and presentation probably tonight. Spring creeks, 90% of the time, you're going to see water temperatures anywhere from, say, you know, generally speaking, in my area, in the south central PA area, you know, to the middle part of the state up in Spring Creek, you're looking anywhere from maybe 47 degrees at the lowest with the winter time to, say, 66 degrees. So with that saying, with that me speaking that, you're not going to have a general time of day. You can fish these things from sunup to sundown for the most part. Your bigger spring creeks, say like Spring Creek at State College, Penns Creek, you may have some thermal problems during the course of the day, and that's where a good fly shop, a local guide, will help you out and say, hey, you know, it's time to get off. But say like Fallen Springs, Big Springs, Tort, they're going to fish year-round. Those water temperatures aren't going to get much more than 65 degrees. So with that saying, water temperature-wise, you can harbor fish these things from sun up to sundown.
Okay.
Season-wise, from these things, they don't ice over. So you can fish them pretty much throughout the entire season.
Okay, kind of like tailwaters then, and I suppose there's
absolutely,
some
just kind of like upper part of the gunpowder or bighorn out in Montana.
Yeah. We just did a show on tailwaters and talking about how those, you know, you can usually fish year-round as well. Because of that constant temperature, and that constant temperature also gives us that good environment for the nutrients, as you said before.
Yep, the closest thing to a good, true spring creek is absolutely 100% of tailwater fishery.
Okay. And do you find a lot of the techniques are similar to fishing them both?
Yes. Most techniques you can use on most of the streams. A lot of your tailwaters can sometimes be large rivers, you may be looking at drift boat techniques, but if you look at some of the spring creeks, you're drift boating some spring creeks as well, except for the, you know, the smaller, you know, 10 to 15, 20, 30-foot wide ones.
Right. Yeah, and I noticed, you know, in your book, which we were talking about before the show, too, a lot of incredible photography by Jay Nichols in there. Some of these are just gorgeous places. I mean, I just like to go just stand there and look. Forget the fishing, you know. It's just, I think, just wonderful environments to be in. Kind of tells you why we go fishing, too. It's not always for the fishing, but for the beautiful places that we're in. Duke asked another question. What is your favorite spring creek and why? And I guess that is probably going to be in your area as far as the location. But do you have a favorite?
Yes and no. One, Duke, it really depends what I feel like. If sometimes I feel like getting my honey team, so to speak, I may go to La Torte and fish because they are some tough fish. I like the smaller spring creeks. I'm blessed with the water right around my house here. I have so many lesser known streams around my area, I can't even shake a stick at all of them. Honestly, if I get a day off, I actually head to Spring Creek up in State College. I can shoot up there in about 2 hours, and I'm fishing. It's definitely a true spring creek, but it's a water stream for me to fish, lots of trout like I'm used to, and it's just a nice little break for me.
Yeah, it's interesting for you to choose it in that fashion. So, and considering you have, you know, things right around the house there, a couple-hour drive is a pretty long haul, so it must be
yep,
you know, real desirable for you to go up there. Yeah.
I'm blessed with water around here. I can draw a 20-minute circle around my house, and I have easily 90 miles of water to fish.
Wow, yeah. Mike Clark in New York also asked about, can you recommend good Pennsylvania spring creek to start out on? So like you said, the La Torte is a challenging one even for you. Is there one or a couple that you would recommend in your area that would be a place for somebody just getting to know spring creeks?
Yep, absolutely. You certainly don't want to fight the beast off. You want to break yourself in easy. Yellow Breeches is a great one to start out on. It's a very heavily stocked spring creek, plus also has a ton of wild trout in it. Another one we're doing a lot of recreation or a lot of restoration work on is Big Springs. It has both a wild rainbow population on, has a lot of brook trout. Being a true spring creek, they're actually a little bit more forgiving. So those two definitely in my area are two I would definitely look out for.
Okay. Okay, great. Okay, let's Duke had a question. What are the essential qualities of a good spring creek fisherman that a good spring creek fisherman must possess? So what are some of the qualities that you see in people that are successful on spring creeks?
That's an interesting one. Years ago, and I can relate this to what I grew up as a kid. I started fly fishing these at 8 years old. I started on the Fallen Springs. And what intrigued me was I was always a hunter and whatnot, but what surprised me so much was how a doggone blue heron could sneak up on trout and catch them. The best thing I can say is one of two things. One is the patience. Be patient like that blue heron. He'll stick around for a while. This trout will get accustomed, and then all of a sudden he spears him. And then on top of that, is blend in like that herring. You don't have to be, you know, full tilt camo, but just make sure you have the proper clothing on and you'll be just fine out there. And they're probably the two best things I can say to get you started on the right track. No fluorescent orange, stuff like that, but just the proper stuff and just the patience and you'll be on the right track for these spring creeks.
So patience, stealth, and watch your colors.
Yep. You know, think like the blue heron.
Yeah, Gary Borger, we did an interview with Gary, and I know you know him. You know, he talked about the coloring and how important that is, just so that you're blending in with what's around you. And that can be different depending on what stream you're fishing on. And is there a lot of blue sky or a lot of trees or whatever? And anything that stands out, you know, will signal those trout. So I hear what you're saying.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. They're there year-round, 24 hours a day. They know that environment so much better than we do. Any little signal can turn them off.
Right, right. Well, let's take a quick break here, Mike, and when we come back, we'll talk with you more about Spring Creek strategies.
Excellent.
Housatonic River Outfitters offers the finest in fly fishing products in Connecticut and fly fishing guides on the Housatonic, Farmington, and other waters. You have the option of wade fishing trips or drifting the river with their guides. In addition to the spectacular trout fishing, they offer guided fly fishing trips and spin fishing trips for warm water species. Please tour their website at www.dryflies.com to view the fishing products and guide services they offer in Connecticut and Massachusetts. They were the first fly shop in Connecticut to offer drift boat guide services and have the largest established guide service in New England. To learn more about Housatonic River Outfitters, visit www.dryflies.com. That's www.dryflies.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Mike Heck about Spring Creek strategies. If you'd like to ask Mike a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately. We'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, Mike, at this point in the show, I always ask my guest, you know, what's going on in your fly fishing world? So tell us a little bit about what you've been doing in the fly fishing industry and about your business there as well.
Well, it's been a little bit slow. As you know, out most parts, it's been pretty darn cold around here. I've pretty much been spending my days getting ready for the fly fishing shows. I put a thing on my Facebook today. I got about 4,000 flies ready for the Somerset show coming up here in the 24th January through the 26th. I'll be up at that fly fishing show, and then I'll be at Cabin Fever show in Pittsburgh, PA, and then back to the Lancaster show. Jay Nichols and Headwaters Press and us are starting on another book. It's basically a stream guide book to the entire state of PA. It's a big collaboration book between a group of us. As he said, he has the best fly fishers and authors collaborated together to write this book. Other than that, I'm getting ready for another great guide season. You can pretty much view all my stuff on the internet at fallensprings.com. I guide on all these waters that we're talking about tonight here in PA, and look forward to hopefully getting some emails back and whatnot for the night.
What was your website address again?
Website is fallingsprings.com.
Fallingsprings.com. Okay, good. Yeah, and I see we've got on your speakers page on our site, we've got that link there for folks and also your phone number, so if they want to get a hold of you, they can do that as well, as well as your email there, so you can provide everything. So good, good. Well, it sounds like you're busy and making good use of the cold weather. So, yeah, stay indoors and stay warm, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing that with us. And let's talk more about Spring Creeks here. We've got John in Portage, Michigan. He says, what's your approach to fishing? And also Duke had asked a similar question. What's your approach to fishing new water that you haven't fished before? Do you have a specific approach for that?
Yes, I love that question. Because as a kid, one of the things in my book that I wrote about is how I started approaching streams. And one of the biggest things I see with clients or people that never fished a stream, they just jump down to a water. And Roger, you've probably seen this before too. They just jump down a stream, tie flies on, and start fishing. And you're just probably shaking your poor head thinking, oh my gosh, I got to get to talk to this guy. One of the biggest things I see, if you never fished water before, is look at the water. If no fish is rising, you know you got to go underneath and pick up some gravel, pick up some rocks, see what's in that water first before you start tying your flies on. If fish are rising, see what they're rising to. 9 chances out of 10, I know most of the times I go fish new waters, I normally don't see fish rising, and I always go to that bottom first. Always pick up rocks, pull some weeds, see what's in the water first, and then start tying your flies on accordingly, and you'll probably find yourself in the trout quicker than you would if you just grabbed some flies out of your fly box and started off fishing.
Yeah, be like the heron and check out what's going on first, and then decide your strategy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, I can remember years ago, a guy came and fished the Fallen Springs right above Garmin Drive, and he was fishing with this, a Montana nymph, and he wasn't moving nothing. And I was like, didn't you look first? And I gave him a couple of flies and showed him some rocks, and then he realized what was going on. These fish know what's in that water.
Yeah, 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 good. We've got some questions coming in over the Internet now. Everybody's getting active out there. Let me shoot a couple of these by you, too, as we keep up with them here, Mike. Sam in Rochester wants to know, is a longer rod or a lighter line more important? Maybe you can talk about your equipment in general in regards to that question.
Yeah, we can. Boy, it really, that's a good one. It really depends. I'm a light line kind of guy. I really enjoy the light lines. If you're fishing, say, the winter time, go with the 4 and 5 weights. The 5 weight can sometimes help with the ice that may be building up here or there. Other than that, say you're fishing early spring, mid-spring, 4 weights are perfect. Once you start getting the summertime, the smaller hatches, 3s and 2s work great. Double taper 4 weight works fine because it lays the line down the water a little softer than a weight forward. As it comes for the length of rods, it's really a matter of discretion. Some of us around here being, you know, Ed Schenk fans and whatnot, we're short rod kind of guys. But I'll tell you, a nice long rod really helps out with working with weed beds. If you're trying to jig some streamers around the weed beds like I like trying to do, bouncing bottoms, a nice 9 to 11 foot rod, if you can find the open places, the fish works great. But I would say rod length for the most part is probably trying to get a Democrat and Republican to try to agree on the same thing. We're definitely going to have our different sail rods, but I like 7-footers because I can sneak around. I like 7.5, again, for the same reason. I can move around these weed beds and whatnot and wade, whereas I like 9 to 10-footers sometimes where I can work jig streamers around the weed beds a lot easier than wading also.
Okay. We did have a question that relates to that, Phil, and I'm not sure if he's in California or Kentucky or California, Kentucky. Anyway, his question is, do you find that streamers are generally effective in spring creek fishing? It sounds like you do. And maybe you can expand upon how you fish streamers in Spring Creeks, like you were just talking about.
Okay. I love streamers. I'm glad looking, you know, I hate looking at the fly fishing as an industry, but I'm so glad to see in these shows that the streamers are coming back. You look at these articulated, the crazy things are coming out with now with Mike Schmidt and some of his streamers, Rick Strollis, they're popping out some sweet streamers. And I've always been a diehard streamer fan. My rainbow trout streamer that I designed, the first trout it actually caught on the Fallen Springs was smaller than a Doll Garden streamer on a 2X long hook. But I love streamer fishing. I love streamer fishing, one, because I can work weed beds, I can work undercut banks, I can work places and move a trout. The other 80 people or 100 people that walk up through there don't realize that trout's around that area. That's why I love streamers. I may not catch him, I may not, may catch him, but I know that fish is there for the next day. Mm-hmm. As for working streamers, streamers are so unique with our spring creeks with the weed beds. It's, I'm going to try to describe it here on air, but you got to think about maybe sitting at your desk where I am now. I'm sitting looking at my desk, and I'm looking at the wall. I'm the weed. Desk is the, sort of slough it between the weed and the wall, which is another weed bed. The channel, channel's the desk. I'm trying to work that streamer through that weed bed. So with a long rod, you can sometimes jig it through there, whereas with a short rod, you may have to throw a reach cast up or downstream and jig it through. As long as you can keep it in that channel water, you have a better chance of swinging the streamer through. Because if you can drift it down through that channel water, that fish is going to have more eye on that streamer. Whatever it is you're fishing, he's going to have more eye on that streamer to want to come out of his weed beds or that channel to eat it.
So in that kind of fishing, you're not sight fishing at all. You're really kind of blind fishing, trying to draw those trout out of the weed beds, right?
Absolutely. 9 chances out of 10, if they're laying dead in those weed beds or dead on those undercuts, they're not looking for a little crest bug or shrimp to eat or a little stonefly nymph. They're looking for a big piece of meat to come out and get a hold of.
Right.
So you got to lure them out of their cover.
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like that's a successful technique for you, one that you really enjoy working out there as well.
Yeah, I love it. It, you know, it reminds me of hunting, you know, stalking deer when I walk up through the mountain grounds I own. I just love chunking streamers up and down these streams.
Okay, we've got a couple of questions since you mentioned Big Spring. We've got a couple of questions specific that came in on the Internet here about Big Spring, so I'm going to run these by you. Tom in Hagerstown says, does Big Spring Creek have wild fish in the lower sections?
Yes, depending on what he means by the lower sections. Pretty much from Newville upstream, you can find wild trout. Definitely from Neely Road, since we got semi-local guy here, definitely from Neely Road, you're going to find wild fish from Neely Road upstream. Wild rainbows, few brooks, more brooks coming in, but there are some few scattered wild trout from Neely Road downstream into the lake.
Okay, and another one about Big Spring, Derek in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. When do the rainbows in Big Spring spawn? And have you noticed there to be a difference in the spawning times of Spring Creek trout compared to other waters?
No. Spring Creek trout, they can change. The rainbows in Big Springs are completely unique simply because it's what was left over from the hatchery rainbows. The hatchery rainbow will spawn in the fall, which is completely uncharacteristic, say, to the Fallen Springs rainbows. The Fallen Springs rainbows came out west, the landlocked steelhead, which spawned in the spring. The Big Spring rainbows came out of hatchery, and they still spawn in the fall of the year. That's why we pretty much try to tell everyone, say, you know, what's the reds in the fall of the year, because the rainbows and the brook trout are going to be spawning from, say, September into December.
That is odd. I don't think I've heard that.
It is completely unique to watch 24-inch rainbows spawn late September it makes you scratch your head and you say, go figure.
Yeah. Well, we know those rainbows have been spread all over the world, and I guess they adapt in how they need to adapt, you know. So.
Yep.
Yeah, so there is a difference there that Derek has detected, and thanks for clearing that up for us. Let's see what else we got here. We'll jump back to our list of questions that came in before the show. So what, Duke asks, what are your five do's and five don'ts of Spring Creek fishing? Can you, and they don't have to be five, but can you kind of line out the things that you, the mistakes you see people make and the things that they should be doing?
Yeah, I think we probably hit this a couple of times. I would say one of the don'ts is certainly don't walk in there dressed up like a Christmas tree, since we're in that holiday season or out of it. Approach is a good one. You're not, for, I would say, almost 85% of the time, you're not going to walk right up to a riffle and maybe high stick, tight line nymph. Approach is key. You're going to pretty much get up behind these fish because pretty much, you know, all trout can see, 270 degrees. Your Spring Creek trout are very skittish. The waters for 90% of the time are almost always crystal clear. That's why a lot of your great fly patterns came from these areas, because of the cunningness of these trout. Willing to change is another, I guess you can say, a do and a don't. Probably a good do. You must do, because if you come up to our streams, and I've seen it a lot of times, guy comes up, I'm fishing dry flies and that's it. It's not going to happen. You must adapt to these trout, because if a hatch is not on, or if they've not seen enough dries, then they're not going to come up. They're going to stay on the bottom. They're going to do what they got to do to stay out of the way of a herring, kingfisher, red-tail hawk. They're going to stay down. Take time. Be patient with these fish. If you're working over a rising trout, you're not going to be able to sit there and bust cast over them. You're not going to be able to sit there and slam flies over them. You're going to sit there and make two or three casts and stop. Two or three casts and stop. Maybe one cast and stop. See if he's right. See if he refuses your dry. Maybe wrong tippet size, stuff like that. Scooch down as much as you can. I know my knees are getting older. I can't do it like I used to. But I wish I could crawl around like I used to and use the vegetation around the sides of the stream to keep me covered for the most part.
Good. Well, those are a lot of great tips there. Piled up there. So, like you say, you know, you tend to go over and over some of the same stuff, but that's the same stuff that we always seem to forget about too when we're out there.
Yep.
So yeah. it doesn't hurt to beat it into us, you know. That's for sure. Well, let's take another quick break.
It's like a broken record sometimes in these streams.
Yeah, it's like telling your kids, you know, what they should do and they don't listen. Well, it's as fly fishers, the pros tell us what to do, and we don't listen either. So we're just as stubborn, I think, sometimes. Well, let's take a quick break here, Mike, and then we'll come back again, and we'll dive into more about Spring Creek fishing. So,
sorry.
Front Range Anglers, a full-service fly shop located in Boulder, Colorado, provides premium tackle and comprehensive instruction and guide services to fly fishers across the country. In business for over 31 years and with a staff that averages 20 years of experience, they will give you the straight story on gear, places to fish, flies, and techniques. They publish a monthly newsletter that is one of the most informative and insightful electronic magazines in the industry. Find out more about this premier shop by logging onto their website at frontrangeanglers.com. That's www.frontrangeanglers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Mike Heck about Spring Creek strategies. If you'd like to ask Mike a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, let's take a look at some of those questions coming in. One here, Mike, have you ever fished the Driftless area in northeast Iowa? Mike?
Yes, I have. Yep.
And how do those Spring Creeks, Brian wants to know, how do those Spring Creeks compare to the ones in Pennsylvania?
They're a little bit wider than what I'm used to, and that's one of the reasons I enjoyed fishing that area. Incredible blooming olive hatches. I've enjoyed fishing the olives out there when I had a chance to, but Now they got a 17-year-old and a 8-year-old. There's chances it went by the wayside, and I stick around this area. But that area is excellent fishing. You're blessed to be in that area.
Yeah, good. Another one, Dale Fogg in Pittsburgh says, what are your top two Spring Creek nymphs and why?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Certainly, definitely it's my limestone shrimp pattern, my Mike Simple shrimp. It's pretty much just everywhere on any Spring Creek. It's an excellent fish pattern. I've caught fish from here to Montana with it, and people tell me it catches fish darn near everywhere they fished it. The second one, I would say, is actually a sulfur nymph. Again, they're present on darn near every Spring Creek from coast to coast, and you can usually catch fish one in throughout the whole entire season.
Well, I was just looking at the picture of your Simple shrimp there, and that's got to really move a lot in the water, I would think. It's with all the dubbing that's on that, it looks like it will really come alive in the water. Is that the...
It does. It really comes, my Simple shrimp comes alive. It does. It really articulates. I try to get a lot of natural movement without a lot of synthetic material. Unfortunately, through the years, I've had to put synthetics in there, but there's just 100% natural movement in a lot of the nymphs I've designed through the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very, very nice looking fly. Okay, so those were two of your favorites, and here's Eric in Boise, Idaho, wants to know what your favorite hatch is on a Spring Creek. You mentioned out in Iowa, it was the blue-wing olive, but do you have a favorite hatch in your area there?
I love it, and I'm pretty sure I'll get some hate mail for this. my favorite hatch by far is a trico.
Uh-huh.
It by far challenges you every way possible, and some days I want to walk up there pulling my hair out, and I think I'm grayer the next day. I just love the challenge of seeing a little 24 on the water and trying to catch trout in the trico hatch. Once it's on the water, I mean, in my area, pretty much once that hatch starts, it's a general day. You're going to fish tricos, and then you're going to fish terrestrial. But you don't know how a trico hatch is going to teach you or how it's going to treat you. And I just love that challenge, that little dog-arm mayfly.
Okay. Here's another question from Duke. Says, I'm a fan of wet fly fishing. Great individuals like Davy Wanton and Sylvester Neems are my inspiration. Do you apply wet fly techniques on Spring Creeks? And if you do, how do you do it? And what's your gear, leader, tippet, presentations, type of water? When do you use that technique?
Well, a lot of my water's down here. Since I'm dealing with all these weed beds, with the Elodea, the watercress, it can be sometimes hard to apply the true wet fly swing techniques. You can do the lift, lesion lift, if you want to, in certain situations. If you have some olives hatching, once the females hit the water, because our females don't egg lay, spinners, they actually crawl down to the water. You can actually swing wets into the bank, and that'll work. Probably the most wet fly fishing I will do is if the water's dirty, say on Yellow Breeches or Spring Creek or a little Juniata, swing some big wets, just trying to move some water and try to pull some trout up. And then also when you got stonefly hatches. The stoneflies actually crawl to the surface. And then a lot of times you'll actually find trout moving to the surface when you got a lot of stoneflies moving to the bank to try to crawl up. So sometimes you can swing some wets right up to the bank to pull those trout out of the water.
Okay. So, but in general, it doesn't seem like that's an easy technique to use in Spring Creeks given the.
Yeah, it really all depends on those Spring Creeks. If you're lacking the weed beds, like say like Spring Creek or, you know, Little J, then you can swing wets. But on a lot of our smaller Spring Creeks, when you got the weed beds, that's real tough to do unless you find a big riffle. Chuck, say for instance, Fallen Springs, you go down to Edwards Avenue and find the glory hole. You can swing wets there, but other than that, you're going to find a few places on a small Spring Creek to possibly do that. So it really is kind of what water you're fishing throw, whether or not in these spring creeks.
All right. Duke in New York, again, another question from him. He said, would you share some tips and techniques on how you would rig and fish spring creeks with dry flies? I would appreciate it if you could break it down by gear, leader tippet presentations up or downstream, types of cast, all those kinds of things. So can you kind of tell us about how you rig up for dry flies and then what you find is the better presentations that you use?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Almost all the time, say fishing dry flies, you're pretty much shooting upstream. You got to be behind these trout and think about a pie plate in front of their face. You're looking at a 12-inch cast. You're going to check that cast. You're going to drop that fly about 12 inches around them. That way, when you shock that tippet down, or you shock the whole leader down, and drop it, you only got the tippet around them. And that's not going to spook him as much as people, my clients and all, what, you know, I said, when I say, oh, you just line the fish. And he's like, no, fly line, you know, 10 feet behind the fish. No, you line him with your top of the leader. You got to shock that leader down and drop it. Lining a trout in these streams pretty much means you throw the butt sections in front of them. So you're thinking of a pie plate. When it comes to leader designs, you know, I'm using the Holt Harvey leader formula. You know, I like the Holt old Mason mono. I like that stiff mono because it rolls over flat. And then when you give it a nice little check and down drop with your elbow, and forearm, you're shocking that leader, it's rolling that 2X over, it's rolling the soft mono over, and it's laying down nice and soft. So your tippet and all that, I normally use 25 inches to 32 inches of tippet. Your leader section, boy, it really depends on what you're building up to. I normally go, you know, 12 for the butt, say for 7X, it's 12 for the butt, 10, 10, 10, that's 15, 13, 11, 2X is 12, and then 13, 13, and what down through till the 7X. But it really depends. I mean, if you like it, depends how you want to throw it. You can go in your backyard and you check it and see how it falls over. You can really mess with the Harvey leader. And so you can really change that to what you want. You can make a pile cast and really check it down to a little bit of nothing, depending on what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas I noticed and what you're talking about here, in case people don't know, is that you're hand tying your leaders and the Harvey's formula. And I noticed you have that in your book on the breakdown that you were just talking about. In case people are confused, they can look in your book and see that.
Yep. No, I love hand tying my leaders. One, because I can adjust them to what I need. But two, I like the knots because say I break off and we all break off. I'm not going to say I don't get caught in a tree. I'd be a liar if I said that. I snap off. I rip my fly off. I'm upset. I can go down through, count the knots and know exactly where I am and start tying on tippets instead of looking at one of those little gadgets in your pocket. And I can count down through, say I'm on 2X and go 3X, 4X, 5X, I'm fishing again.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas looking at a little gadget and figuring out what I got to do.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely old school, but, you know, that, like you say, that the advantage is total control over, you know, your leader and presentation. So that's the biggest advantage. So, yeah.
But I'd say as for most part, with Duke's question, I don't know, I think, you know, for most part, if he's getting into these spring creeks, I would say if you toss some nymphs, go with a 4X leader or go with a 4X tippet, say 8 to 10 feet. Most 90 chances out of 10 throwing dries, I would go with a 6X tippet, whatever you want to throw. A lot of people can't throw, you know, 9 foot, 10 foot. You know, if you want to stretch out to 12, you can. A lot of people can't toss that. Once you start looking at 7 foot or 7X, you're definitely looking at 12 foot. So, you know, definitely think about 4X and definitely think about the 6X factor.
Yeah. Now, we have a question. This is about rigging too and flies, but Mike in Penn State says, this came in on the internet too. What's your favorite rig during a hatch, dry with an emerger, two dries, dry emerger nymph. He's talking about, you know, multi-fly rigs here.
Ah, well, we are Penn State, man. Had to go there. Sorry, Roger. I am a dry dropper fanatic. Once I started that years ago, you know, it's definitely a secret of mine, but I don't care if it's a hatch, terrestrials, whatnot. I think most people are taking themselves out of fish if they're not fishing a dropper behind a dry. So if you're fishing a terrestrial, think about what hatches may be coming on. I don't know, microcaddis, midges, sinking ant. If you're fishing a sulfur hatch, you know, definitely, you know, the mayflies, you know, sulfur nymphs, stuff like that. But definitely do the dry dropper thing.
Okay. What's your key to deciding whether you're doing on the dropper side of things, whether you're going to be doing an emerger or a nymph? What signs do you look for?
If I see a bunch of fish that's not really porpoising, then I'm definitely going to drop something underneath the surface. If I see them sipping, I'm definitely going to do the emerger, CDC emerger, maybe my snowshoe emerger, which just sticks above the surface. If it's low light hours, I got to see something. I'm not going to see anything like that. I'm going to do a high vis parachute, something like that, so I can see. Daylight hours, I am definitely going to go by what they're going for. Definitely that top fly is going to be something I can at least see on the surface. Like I said, low light hours, I'm going to have something I can see, that I can see that fly twitching if they take the subsurface pattern.
We had a question come in on the Internet, too, from Larry Hall in Indian River, Michigan. And he says, could you discuss any of your nighttime fishing advice for Spring Creeks? And since you just mentioned low light levels or going into the evening, do you do any night fishing in the Spring Creeks?
I love night fishing. I used to do it. I think we talked about my kids earlier. I used to do it all the time. I would fish the sulfur hatches on the fall and spring till 11 o'clock at night. I'd fish the Susquehanna River to, I met some old timers up there years ago, and I was walking out of the river at, say, I would think about 11 o'clock at night, and they were walking on the river to fish. So I learned to night fish, and it's amazing. That's how I learned to fish the male duns, the male spinners or the male duns coming off of the trico hatch, because they would hatch at nighttime there July and August on the fall and springs. Now I realize a big old cricket would be a lot easier than seeing a little trico pattern. The caddis, the sulfurs, a lot of the hatches hatch at nighttime. Biggest part around here now, you got to watch in PAs, you got to watch where you fish at nighttime, because sometimes you can't fish till an hour after dusk. But nighttime fishing is great. Mouse patterns work great. If you don't want to go out and buy some mouse patterns or tie your own mouse patterns, the biggest Mudler minnow, skate that thing across the surface, sometimes will entice some big time strikes. Bouncing some big streamers off the bottom will sometimes work. But the majority of my big time hits at nighttime come from just dragging stuff across the surface in front of a fish's face, whether I know they're there or not, will work. And that parlays back to me saying jigging the streamers in places I know where big fish were. Whereas I know they're there, I can drag something by them at nighttime, and I got a chance at them again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Another related question came in on the Internet, Dave in Pennsylvania. He says, is there any difference with sculpins versus streamers? I guess what he's asking, is there any difference in the way you fish sculpins versus streamers?
No. Well, yeah, no. I mean, our Spring Creek trout, the tough part about these streams are, they're crystal clear. These trout see the insects like no other. Whether, you know, unless a big boiling riffle, these trout know what mayfly nymph crawls around like, what a mayfly nymph drifts up like, and I swear they swear, I think they know what a minnow moves like. And if you strip a streamer through, it's not going to work as good as you want what Ed Schenck deems sculpinating. You know, sculpins bounce, you know. Minnows will bounce. If a minnow's dying, I learned how to fish minnows when I fish bass with live minnows. Bass wouldn't eat a dead minnow, but bass would eat a crippled minnow, and crippled minnows would either bounce on the bottom of a pond or peck at the surface, and that's where bass ate them. And I learned those techniques and applied them when I started bouncing streamers around. I would either throw a ton of weight, just jig that thing off the bottom when I could, or just when I had exposed weed beds and just bounce it up on the surface from the weed bed up to the surface and pull fish like that. You're just not going to drag streamers through these spring creeks and catch fish. You can use woolly buggers, muddler minnows. You can pretty much use anything that can almost look like a baitfish imitation and lure these trout out, as long as you make it look like the minnow you're trying to imitate.
Okay. So we had a question on the internet from Eric in Boise, Idaho, about how fast do you strip your streamer. I think you just answered that for Eric, because it depends on what you're trying to simulate, and you're using more bouncing and cripple techniques than straight swimming techniques, it sounds like. Is that right, Mike?
Yep. Absolutely. I'm using definitely more of the bouncing, definitely more of the swimming, but, you know, some days, you know, we're not a trout. We don't know what we're trying to figure out. Some days you can strip them fast. Some days you can move them slow. The way I work through a river system with my streamers is, if I'm working up through the water, if I'm working up through a stream or a river, if slow's not working, I'll go fast. If fast's not working, I'll go slow, and I'll figure out that medium, and then that's where I'll finish the day stripping my streamers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Another follow-up question on these streamers, since you got people's attention with streamers here. Sam in Rochester says, how do you weight streamers to fish the weed beds? You weight them any differently?
That's an excellent question, because people ask me, I send out almost 15,000 flies a year, and a lot of my flies go out unweighted. If you want special requests for weighted flies, I weight them. But the reason I don't weight my flies is I have no idea if I'm going to be stripping streamers in 4 inches of water or 4 feet of water. And what I do, I just mash a big old split shot on the eye, in front of the eye, or if you're a fly tire, go with the thread thing, black, white, or brown. Black heavyweight, white no weight, and brown medium weight. And just go that way, go that route.
Okay. Let's take another quick break here and right back with the folks with more information on spring creeks. So we'll be right back. Have you ever dreamed about the classic actions of bamboo fly rods? Do you know that it's possible for you to make your own bamboo rods? Well, with the help of Power Fibers Online Magazine, you can do just that. Power Fibers is a magazine dedicated to making bamboo fly rods and telling the stories about bamboo through the ages. From rod making techniques to stories about fishing bamboo rods to rod maker profiles to classic tapers, Power Fibers has it all. Visit their website at www.powerfibers.com. That's www.powerfibers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Mike Heck about Spring Creek strategies. If you'd like to ask Mike a question, just go to our homepage at Ask About Fly Fishing and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, we're getting down to the end here, Mike, but we still got lots of questions. So
We'll try to get them all done, won't we?
Yeah, we'll just keep. We got a lot of activity online tonight, so that's made a big difference. Here's a question from Jerry in New York. He says, Mike, I hear a lot about midges on my streams, but I do not see a lot of midge activity. Is that common on spring creeks in upstate New York? And I don't know how well you know upstate New York spring creeks, but why don't you answer them as best you can?
There's not too many spring creeks in upstate New York. I do know one in lower state New York. It's actually called Spring Creek.
okay.
So go figure that one.
Yeah.
You may not see a lot of midges. if you see fish, my thing is, if you see fish rising for no apparent reason, whether it's springtime, wintertime, or summertime, they're midges or terrestrials. Definitely if it's late spring and in the summer, they're terrestrials and midges. Again, if you see them for eyes for no apparent reason, they've got to be midges. Then it's your call to figure out what the heck color and size it's rising to. My general rule of thumb is think about the season. If it's early in the year, late in the year, it's going to be a darker color. Darker or early, late, need to have darker colors to absorb the sunlight so they can stay warm. Later in the spring, summer, mid, early fall, they got to have lighter colors to go with your lighter color midge patterns. As for the trout, go with the midges, go with CDC midges, go with the hackle midges. If they refuse your fly, go with smaller midge pattern, maybe get larger, or maybe get a lighter tippet. But that color is probably going to be key.
Okay, color is the key, yeah. And by the way, for Jerry and everybody else too, and I'll announce this at the end, our next show on the 22nd was going to be with Davey Wanton on midge presentation. So we're going to dig in deep to presenting those little buggers. So
Mike's midge pupa.
Pardon me?
Mike's midge pupa.
Mike's midge
pupa? I developed that Mike's midge pupa I developed. That's a good one. But yeah, color's key.
Color is key. Okay, good. Okay, let's see here. Oh, this is a different question. Terry Little, Fort Collins, Colorado. This is, when the water conditions are at low flow in a 20 to 40-foot wide stream, how often do you nymph or wet fly fish without an indicator? And if you do fish without an indicator, what's the average total length of leader and tippet when you're doing that?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. I'm for and against indicators. You're 20, 40-foot wide stream, boy, you can really depend on the depth and whatnot. I'm going to kind of keep it general, and here's what I'll say, because I don't know how far the shooting line and whatnot. If I'm throwing indicators, if it's chin clear, I'm going by the fly line. If you're a deep depth, you can get away with an indicator. Say you're fishing 4 or 5 feet depth, and I'll put the indicator as far up as I can. Reason being, the indicator I feel sometimes hinders the ability of the nymph to go the same speed as the bottom current. The top current, I sometimes feel, is moving faster than the bottom. You got your turbulence, you got your rocks rolling around, which slows everything up. So say you're fishing a riffle, you know it's 2 feet deep, and you throw your indicator up at 3 feet deep. I a lot of times feel throwing it up 4, 4.5 feet is much better with that indicator, because you're dragging that nymph along the bottom a lot better. But whereas the water's gin clear, you really have no riffle water, and you're fishing long slick flats, I'm not even going to throw an indicator, because a lot of times, you know, you slap an indicator out there, say a half-inch little foam ball that I like using, the lightning strikes, you're still going to spook fish. Yeah. If you don't spook them, it's going to hit the water enough to startle them, and then you're going to have to pause and wait for them to start feeding again. Agitated water, you can certainly get away with it, but chin clear water, to me, is a big no-no. Long flats is a no-no. Agitated waters, try to double the depth the best possible with that indicator to get that nymph down to where it needs to go.
Yeah.
Leader and tippet wise, again, that really depends. When it comes to the dry fly leader wise, I think you got to be much more precise to let it roll over, let it drop, and allow a slack to pull out so you get a nice drag feed drift. I know we're not talking about dry fly. When it comes to nymph, I think you got a big leeway with that nymph leader. Say I'm throwing a 4X, my 3X gets real short. I know I'm cheating and throwing a big, you know, 36 inches of 4X on there and got away with it. So tippet-wise, just, you know, just it really depends on what you want to feel. I just keep a slack nymph leader is what I think some good bit of time.
Okay. Good. Oh, this is an interesting one. Eugene Mars in Arkansas wrote in and says, what technique or techniques do you use to maintain line control when fishing streamers or nymphs without the use of indicators in fast-moving water on spring creeks? Seems that a tight line will produce underwater drag. However, too much slack will make it impossible to detect strikes. It's kind of somewhat what we were just talking about, but he's trying to find that balance between tight line and slack line and still being able to feel the fish.
That becomes, I think, what Burson told me a long time ago watching me fish, Charlie Mack. And he said sometimes some people just have an instinct of when you know when to hook up, when you don't. Depending on the line speed and all that and which way the current's moving, I can say reach cast. Upstream reach, downstream reach will really help you out. Depending where the water current is between you and where you're fishing, depends if you want to throw an upstream or a downstream reach in that cast will help you out if you don't want to use an indicator. Keeping a line off the water is a big thing. That's kind of why I've been liking long leaders. That's why I've been, you know, like we said way earlier in the cast, long rods will help you with that. Streamer-wise, I don't think I've never known a fish not to hit a fly. I don't hit, you know, Montana, I never had super, super swift rivers where I don't detect a strike because when they hit a big old streamer, they hit it. And you know it's on there. But keep line off the water. I know from when I fished up in New York, what really helped me out with the nymphing and whatnot was when I learned to really stretch my leaders out nymphing-wise was these just long leaders because I really detect the strikes to keep my fly line off the water. And when I was fishing those big New York browns, I was throwing these 11-foot leaders and had, at some points, 5 inches of fly line out of my rod tip. And I could really detect their strikes just like, oh, Joe Humphreys, my friend of mine, would just throw them on out of his fly rod.
Yeah, I saw one of the fly shows in Denver once. Lefty Cray was doing some casting demonstration. And he put out about, oh, I'd say 40 foot of line out on the casting pond there. And he showed, you know, I mean, graphically what you were just talking about, because if he just let the line lay on the water and he had a big loop in it, he showed, what he did is he grabbed the line and stripped it. He said, okay, watch the fly at the very end of this when I strip this. He strips it, and basically nothing happened at the end of that line, you know. Then he pulled the line in and got as close to taut to that of the line that he could, and then he says, now watch it. And then he stripped it, and that fly moved. And it was just showing you that having the line on the water, which is what you were just talking about, how much slack is there. So by the time you do set, it's too late. You know, because
you really didn't move
the fly, you know.
Yep, when I explain to everybody, that's why I fish these smaller spring creeks almost year-round, and I'm throwing at the most 20 feet line. And I explain to these people, come down and fish these smaller spring creeks, and they're messed up for the first couple hours, and they say, well, I'm used to throwing 50 feet line, you know, leader and all that. And I'm like, yeah, well, I go fish your waters. I'm messed up for the first couple of hours because I'm not used to throwing all that line and trying to haul back when a fish just took 40 feet away. It's a big difference because you almost got to be acting as they're taking the fish or taking your fly.
Yeah. So I hear what you're saying. I've seen it demonstrated, and, you know, it can make all the difference. And also what you were saying, too, I fished with one friend of mine who I swear every time we go fishing, he catches twice as many fish as I do because he has that sixth sense or whatever, you know. But then other people have told me, hey, it's not so much a sixth sense as that he's just checking more often. He's checking twice as often for that fish than you are, and that can make all the difference in the world, too.
Yeah, I always felt when I'm nymphing, I'll pull up, and I always do that. I'll pull up, and they're like, what are you doing? I was like, well, I can make another cast. You know, they're going to be around. I'm going to be here all day long. It's a matter of them me take my fly when it comes to him. I was like, but you just got to feel. You got to have that right feel in it. And that's, you know, that's probably another story with the right fly rods and whatnot. I mean, you just can't go out there at Walmart and buy a Wonder Stick and, you know, have the right feel. I mean, you can just touch a rod and you can just feel the right nymphing techniques and you can just feel a tap in there and you know what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're coming up to the end of the show here, and I know there's still a lot of questions coming in on the internet, but I wanted to hit a few of these that came in before the show, and they all had Ben in Cascade, Maryland, Mike in Virginia, and Rob in Richwood, New Jersey. We're all asking questions about winter fishing in Spring Creek. So can you kind of, and I know you say you fish the Spring Creeks all year round, but are there different things or different tactics, tips, anything that you can provide these guys with fishing in the winter on the Spring Creeks?
Dress warm and Starbucks. How's that?
Dress warm and Starbucks, huh? Yeah. Well, but otherwise, fishing pretty much the same.
I'm picking. No, I would, wintertime, I would definitely expect pretty much primarily nymphs and streamers. For the most part, expect most of your weed beds to be gone, which is a great thing because your trout are going to start stacking up. So look for ripples, look for pools, look for stuff like that, and focus your time there rather than prospecting like you would in the summertime.
Okay. Anything else?
Unless you have some bridges on some of these spring creeks, then maybe look for some low-lying bridges, because the low-lying bridges congregates midges, and you can have some rising trout if you can get your cast underneath those bridges.
Mm-hmm. Okay, okay. Okay, so enough for tonight. I think about wound it up here. Thanks for all the questions, folks. You guys were just more than generous with the questions tonight, and I'm sorry we didn't get to them all, but we did our best, and especially all the folks online, nice to interact with you guys and gals out there online, so that's wonderful. But we need to wrap it up here, and stick with me here, Mike. I'm going to give away your book at the end of the show here. I've got a few things to take care of before we do that. We're going to be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. And thanks to Stackpole and Headwater Books, we're going to be giving away your book, Spring Creek Strategies. So stick with us, and we'll be doing that just shortly. Reeling and Healing Midwest is a nonprofit organization that champions fly fishing retreats for women surviving and battling all types of cancer. Their mission is to introduce women to the healing powers of the sport of fly fishing and provide a one-of-a-kind experience on and off the water. This is accomplished through the elements of fly fishing, positive camaraderie, peer coaching, nature, and support network, which in turn renews the spirit and hope of each participant. Reeling and Healing Midwest is in need of trout flies, waders, leaders, fishing equipment, and other items. To view their current wish list and to learn how you can support their retreats, visit www.reelingandhealingmidwest.org. That's reelingandhealingmidwest.org. Or call them at 866-237-5725. That's 866-237-5725. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave our website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of this show? Just click on the link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. And now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from this show's registration database. So if you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show so you don't miss out on a chance to win some of these great prizes that we have. If you are the lucky winner on our drawings, we'll contact you after the show and provide you with information on how to receive your gift. So we'll do that by email and connect with you there. So the first thing we're going to give away tonight is a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And to learn more about the Federation, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. A great organization to be part of, an international organization, and I know whoever wins the membership will enjoy that connection. So let me bring up our little drawing program for accesses our database, and let's see if we can find a winner for that. And come on, Jim George in Pennsylvania. Jim George in Pennsylvania. So a local there for you, Mike, won that prize, which is nice. And I don't know, do you know Jim George?
I don't know Jim. I hope I don't.
Okay.
I hope I'll know him soon, but good job, Jim.
Yeah, congratulations. Okay, and so the next thing we're going to do is give away a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, which you can learn more about at Amato Books and also all the books that Amato has available as well and other publications. So check that out. And we got a winner there who is Sam Brown in Ohio. Sam Brown in Ohio. Good. Some Eastern Coast folks here. I guess Ohio's not on the coast, but it's east of the Rocky Mountains quite a ways. So anyway, congratulations, Sam. And you now have a subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. Okay. Now let's give away a copy of Mike's book, Spring Creek Strategies, courtesy of Stackpole Books and Headwater Books. And this is a wonderful book, folks. I mean, even if you don't read it and you just look at the pictures, it'll be worth it. I have a photographic background, and so I really appreciate the work that was done in there. But Mike did a great job and spends a lot of time with the hatches, which we really didn't get into a lot here on the show. But you'll have to
dig
into the
book.
Maybe
another time.
Yeah, that's another show, huh? So, so let's come up with a question here, and then, Mike, you can help me decide if I get the right answer. Let's see. Okay, I'm going to make this a two-part question. What was Mike's favorite hatch, and what is the first of the favorite nymphs that he has, that he uses? Okay, so his favorite hatch. And then his favorite nymph, the first one he talked about. And let's see what we get here, Mike. So now I'm checking the queue here, seeing if how fast these type. And I think we may have a winner here. I'll check with you, Mike. So the nymph was a simple shrimp, and your favorite hatch was trico. Is that right?
Bingo, baby.
Bingo. So Dale Fogg.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Dale Fogg in Pittsburgh. Dale Fogg and
Dale.
You know Dale?
Oh, Dale Fogg. Yeah, I know Dale Fogg. I sent him some money.
You sent him some money? Okay.
Cabin Fever TU show. Good job, Dale.
Yeah. So, good
job to PA guys tonight.
Yeah, they came through for you. They sure did. Well, Dale, you'll need to send your mailing address to. You can either use the same text box you just used, because I do have your name and your email address, so I just need your mailing address so that we can get that mailed out to you. Or you can send it by email to info@askaboutflyfishing.com, info@askaboutflyfishing.com. But a good way to do it is just put it in that text box, and then I'll grab it from there, and we'll be good to go. So our first person to answer got it right, which is great. Thanks for listening carefully. So I'm sure he learned a lot during the show because he was paying attention. Well, Mike, hey, I appreciate you being on with us tonight. I know it's late out there on the East Coast and cold, so time to crawl in that nice warm bed and get some rest. But thanks for sharing your experiences with us and all your knowledge with us. We really appreciate it.
Roger, I enjoyed it, and I'd be glad to do it again for you, my friend.
Okay, well, thank you. And hopefully everybody out there, you found our archive on our website if you haven't. There's a couple links on our homepage and many links at the bottom of every page. In that archive, you'll find over 180 shows we've done now that ask about fly fishing. Everything from trout to tarpon to Madison River to the Latorte and all over the place. So dig in there and learn something from our archives. I know you'll enjoy them. Our next broadcast is going to be on January 22nd, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern. And on that show, I'm going to interview Davey Wanton, and our topic for the show will be midge presentation. Davey is a master of fly fishing streams, and he'll help refine your small fly presentation skills. So listen in to learn about gear, leader tippets, approach, casts, and all the critical factors to be successful with midges. I'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Amato Books, Front Range Anglers, Housatonic Outfitters, and Power Fibers Online Magazine for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. That's 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.